Hey everyone, welcome to the Talia Like It Is show on freedomizerradio.com. We have wrapped up our home birth, hospital birth series for now. Loved the response that had come in. And, you know, it's just, at the end of the day, all about being as informed as possible when it comes to this type of decision and the fact that so many of you didn't even realize that this could be an option. You know, and how many of you actually went and contacted your insurance and found out that they would take care of a certain percentage or that there are steps you can take. That's pretty cool. That's, you know, once again, all this platform is really about just knowing your options. So today we are going to be talking about a few things that are going on right now in the news that are probably worthy to mention, and also jumping into what might be a two-day topic here regarding friendship, choosing the right friends, and who better to have my brother on the line today. I know you guys love his views, and you know, he's not really too active on social media or anything, so but hey, Jed, if you're on, I'm going to go ahead and dial you in, but just hit that one button so that I could get this started. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Morning. How's it going?
It's going. The little one woke up with me, so she'll be here with me today. We were just dancing to your jazzy hold music.
is there jazzy hold music on this?
Yeah.
I didn't even realize what the hold music entailed, but that's good to know.
Yeah, I didn't even recognize. I mean, you kind of just forget they're there until, you know, there's an activity to go with it. So yeah, she was just shaking her shoulders and moving to the, you know, to the beat. So she's awake. She's wide awake, more awake than I am.
Wow. Well, that's good. You know, thanks for reminding me. I need to get, I'm allowed to put on whatever kind of music I would want playing on the in-betweens, and I know I got to work on stuff like that, an ad. So, you know, got to do that soon. I'm also going to need a proper logo for this. You know, somebody who could help me with that?
From the website, it does look like the website already has it. I don't know. I wasn't sure where you would put it.
Yeah, I didn't choose that one. I don't know. It's like, it's the one, I know what you're talking about. It's like the two eyes, like eyes and a.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway. All right. Well, Kay, thanks again for being on.
Yeah, of course.
I know it's a conversation that we wanted to talk about months ago already on here. But prior to that, can I just for like 10 minutes here address really quick what's going on, you know, in parts of America right now, especially in Los Angeles? What's your take on this typhus epidemic going on in downtown LA, like Skid Row right now?
Yeah, it's surreal. And it's surprising, you know, Skid Row, it's a weird term to use for just downtown LA, because I hear it's starting to, you know, these cities, these mini tent cities are starting to build up in neighborhoods like Glendale and Pasadena, our old fishing ground, hunting grounds. they're growing the Koreatown. They're the fancy areas there. They're kind of, you know, people are getting out of their high-rise apartments, really expensive apartments, to find, you know, human feces and human debris waiting them outside their doors. It's a disaster, you know. So yeah, with the increasing amounts of garbage comes a disease that, you know, we thought we got rid of, you know, but this is where it forms. It's great, and the news is being all kinds of, pinpointing the exact problem, which is the rats. You know, they're just blaming the rats and more specifically the fleas on the rats, because this has been identified as a flea-borne disease. So people, you know, if you're in LA right now, keep your pets indoors, and fumigate,
gosh.
You know, check them daily, because that's how they're getting in right now. And regular, you know, normal non-homeless people obviously are starting to catch typhus as well, because, you know, just how it works.
Typhus
incredible.
is people in this country especially are scratching their heads, because it's literally a medieval disease.
And they're fleas.
How is this medieval disease happening in 2019? You know, typhus can have serious effects on the body. I want to point out there is a vaccine in development. I know in 2017 they were working on one. It hasn't been approved yet. It hasn't hit, you know, not out there yet. But know that they're definitely working on it. But, I mean, if it's left untreated, right now if you got typhus and you're not homeless, you can access antibiotics. But if it's not treated, some serious effects can happen to these people. It's like inflamed blood vessels. They can cause this dramatic drop in blood pressure, as well as internal bleeding. And if you're suffering from typhus, you're going to experience things like kidney failures, swelling of your liver and spleen. So naturally, I mean, in the medieval times, when people didn't have the access to the clean running water, this happened a lot in like war camps, you know, and during famines, people would just fall over dead. So typhus can kill you if you are living in third world country type situations, which what's scary about that is that's very much what these tent cities all over California are. Just in San Francisco, in like last summer, you had their UN representatives that were coming in comparing the streets of San Francisco and their human feces problem to places that were like in Kenya. They were comparing it to third world nations and the slums. You know, looking into it, Jed, there's a poop patrol in San Francisco.
Well,
patrol.
and it's amazing that they are just, you know, the news is all about the rats and the fleas, but, you know, let's at least shoot, you know, closer to the middle there. You know, why are there rats? Why are there fleas on rats? You know, it's because the garbage, the human garbage that they're allowing people to live in, to set up shop and live and spread, you know. So it is not the rat. It's the homeless problem. It's the tent city problem that's allowing this disease to come in. And like you were saying earlier, if people are literally scratching their heads in these cities, I also recommend, you know, it's probably good that you see a doctor or check yourself for the fleas, because, you know, that's how they're getting to you. You know,
oh my gosh! Can you imagine? Oh my gosh! Yeah, like one little itch. If people have to be in this downtown. The thing is, these tent cities and how they're set up. If you look at it in LA, right behind these tent cities, your backdrop is the cityscape of downtown LA with the overpriced cafes and you know, all of the new developments that are coming up, like these very expensive little apartments that they're renovating, because they're taking old business buildings and they're just trying to make it a lot of living spaces. And obviously that's going to just all the more add to the homeless population because of the costs of living associated with being in downtown LA. But this is your view. This is your stench. It's right behind, you know, that's your backdrop too. So, So
it's surreal.
I'm floored. I'm floored. But you know, Oh, go ahead.
I was going to just say it's just a real quick note. It's absolutely surreal, and it was said it should have been expected. This is a completely preventable problem, because for the longest time we did have a solution. It was called the sanitation department. You know, it's the people, the fine men and women who go around every morning in those trucks and do the job that a lot of people don't want to do and clean up the city. But when the city is passing, you know, it's passing around those bills that allow for these, you know, trash-ridden, what do you want to call them, tent ghettos to pop up, this is the consequence of that, you know. This is the consequence of that that noble act, I guess, is in the mind's eye, is what they're doing.
And, you know, it's not just the fleas. Which that's what's scary about this, because you could avoid Skid Row altogether, but if you have to walk around LA County, it's a flea that could bite you that's carrying this, you know, because of the dead, decaying rat bodies that are all over that place too. And not just that, they're finding the syringes of, like, for dirty needles. It's contaminated too with dirty needles all over the sidewalks. It's not being handled. And many of these businesses that have pulled out of there, because they're making it more for, like, you know, living areas, so many businesses have pulled out of there, so they're not really paying for there to be these public restrooms overnight where you can, you know, access. And a lot of these public restrooms now that are open, they said it's 12 restrooms in, like, a 5-block radius that have to be shared by 2,000 something people that are homeless in just like this little section. And none of these restrooms have soap or paper towel, because when they do get filled within, you know, 30 minutes, it's all stolen. It's all taken out of that. Very much like third world countries. You know, like, I've shared this before, but, you know, the restrooms in the Philippines, even just the airport, the international airport in Manila, no toilet paper, no soap. And sometimes there's an attendant standing outside that if you want to pay him a quarter, he'll give you some toilet paper. But then what does that say about the people that go in there that don't pay the guy the 25 cents, that don't have that money? This is why it's literally, so comparing these tent cities to these third world nations, I mean, it's pretty accurate. Oh, God.
This is completely preventable. This is, you know, just leave it up to these virtue signaling politicians to enact these bylaws or whatever you want to call them, and then disappear into their gated, you know, walled in communities, so they don't have to deal with this. You know, the communities that they go home to, they won't have the homeless problem walking around, you know, because they literally just can't get in. I don't know what they expect businesses and who are going to have to live next to these. It's one thing if you could just see it, right? But you have to imagine the environment can't smell that great with rats and feces walking around. So this is kind of an attack on all senses. If I were in the shoes of a person who is living by a growing tent city, if I wake up to that across, not only is it unsanitary, it's very safe. You know, a lot of the homeless people in most major cities, especially in Seattle, you'll find that they are, you know, they're just released. They've just been released from mental institutions that could no longer support them. So these are people who are mentally unwell, walking around normal suburbia and congregating with each other, there's gonna be all kind. You can imagine all kinds of backlash when people thought like bum fighting was bad. You know, like I can't imagine what else could you know, what other kind of problems could spawn from this. I hear there's somewhere around what 200 plus tent cities alone in the Los Angeles area. It's getting pretty significant, you know, that's over like 75,000 or I don't know, it's between 55, they don't know the number. It's like between 55,000 and 75,000 homeless people living as part of, you know, communities, like living near suburbia. So yeah, it's what a disaster. And what do you do about that? You know, that problem can only grow, and then eventually it turns into a new, like, mini domestic immigration problem. Like, how do you move? It's getting to the point where it's getting to certain numbers where it's like, you're not going to be able to move them without a significant show of force pretty soon. You know, this is, I don't know how long tent cities have been around. It couldn't have been more than, can't really be too much more than a year that they've been enacted. And, oh, man, it is, it's just escalating. You know, so...
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck, LA. Good luck, San Francisco. Your problem is going to be far greater than right now. They're just taking care of syringes and feces. And I imagine after a year, poop, you know, human poop and feces and syringes are going to be like, they would have wished, they're going to wish for that problem back. That's going to be the least of their worries within another year if they let this continue. So,
yeah, pretty, it's just appalling. It's lately, it's becoming, literally you wake up, you're like, what next? So,
yeah.
But you know, we can discuss topics like this together. I guess I would say, like, when we've had our conversations in the past, you know, you're definitely somebody on my top five that I find that I can call and talk to for hours. And it's cool that you're my brother, but you know, but I guess my point being that if you weren't my brother, I'd want somebody like you to be like a friend, you know, because we share, I guess, a lot of the same values. And we were talking about this. Like, people in your life, that if something comes up that sparks an interest and a desire to discuss further, how many people like that do you have in your life? And I know that, like, today we're just talking about an issue going on in LA, but for years and years now, even on things that you and I disagree on, we can have these kind of conversations, you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about this topic of, I guess, friends and friendship only because it seems like a lot of people are kind of struggling with the, how would you put this?
The concept of
like
friendship?
A lot of people are robbing themselves of having important conversations like this with people in their lives because the people in their lives are they kind of have to tiptoe around. And so, I mean, if we want to define it first, I guess is everything we should define. Like, for instance, what does the dictionary describe a friend as? It's a person whom one knows and with whom one has a bond of mutual affection, typically exclusive of sexual relations. Synonyms would be like companion, close friend, confidant, or confidant, sorry. Workmate, schoolmate, anyway. So that's what is described, that's what the definition of a friend would be. And I guess it comes to just choosing your friends wisely nowadays. I don't know, where would you like to start with something like this? Should we start with, I guess, our childhood friends and how we chose them growing up versus the kind of friends that you have as adults? And
yeah, I guess that would be a logical start. Maybe pointing out the differences between childhood friends and adult friends, and how the dynamic is. You know, we don't really think about it too often, and I didn't even think about it too often until we started having these side conversations about the people that end up in our lives. But you know, when you're a kid, your friends are pretty much friends by proximity for the most part. Most of your friends were your classmates. Those were your initial, you know, kind of like you're forced in a room together. You've all got like you're all paired together. You've got the same tasks that you've got to go through together. So it's more or less a controlled friending kind of situation, you know. So, and typically you made friends within your same class. You know, I remember in from elementary school, like from grade 1 to 5, it was you're pretty much moving in the same class. You know, it wasn't until middle school, at least from on my end, where we started that it was a really, really strange dynamic of moving from class to class and having different people in each of the periods. You know, you weren't just one class moving through the whole day. Now you were 6 classes moving through the day, which made friendships a little more challenging in that sense. But yeah, and it, you know, as a kid, you know, your values and your principles are still more or less being worked on. You know, for most kids that haven't found their footing yet when it comes to values. So, you know, we tend to do some weird out-of-the-box stuff that, you know, when adults correct you for it, you feel, adults correct you for it later on, or you realize what you do later on, you know, you feel kind of silly. You feel like, you know, socially you could have been a little bit better, obviously, because you were still, you know, what does an 8-year-old know about a lot of these complexities? So I guess I would say
during your elementary years, I think it's just terrifying to just have no friends, and you want to at least have one or two friends in school, right? And meaning just people that you could be around physically so that you are not alone, just somebody to eat lunch with. You know, that's like standard-wise, those are your only standards, I think, when you're that little, right?
Yeah. I would say that, you know, kids are, at least in my situation, thinking about it growing up, I feel like I got lucky because I knew what my talent was early on in life. By the time I was 7, I was already, you know, drawing and getting into the world of art and, kind of self-taught, really getting into it. And for me in school, that was both my social ticket and my shield, you know. So I remember, as an artist, I had this weird, I don't want to say aura, but people were just drawn to this kid sitting down in the back of the room, just doodling. You know, doodling superheroes and Ninja Turtles and, you know, cars and, you know, spaceships and whatever. And people are just, you know, kids were just drawn to that. And I made friends very easily. In fact, the friends came to me in that sense. Like, I kind of used my talent as just fishing people in. And I wasn't even particularly that good. I just did art. And it was unique enough, at least, that it drew that kind of attention, even from the bigger kids. So a lot of people knew me in that way, and I was generally left alone from the bullying. I wasn't bullied because people knew who I knew, and I remember even the early years in high school. We went to a high school with there was like a Mexican gang, so, you know, the Indian the Indian gangs, you know, the groups, the cliques. I don't know if I say gangs,
whoa,
they might sound like
whoa,
criminals,
whoa.
But
hold on.
It's
Native American now. Can't say Indian.
All right, fine. Back then.
Okay, fine. But yeah, back then.
Native American cliques.
They even called themselves that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Native. Fine. We'll say Native American cliques and the Hispanic cliques. Guys, this was pre-Trump. Let's take the conversation back. I'll preface it with, this is all pre-Trump, before all these terms became like headline, you know, racism, you don't use the right nouns and pronouns,
right,
and whatever it is. So this is the pre-Trump era.
Right. And
so,
they had their gangs, and they had like gang battles in our high school.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and the big threat. Yeah, I remember 11th grade was pretty much, we were waiting for the big war, you know, the big cultural spat on the playground, as it were. There's always like this ominous, you know, side chatter between the football players and the people at lunch. They were just, everybody's waiting for this, and you always see those weird glue. And I think it actually happened at one point. I don't think it was during school hours, or it might have been after school hours when most kids were already gone, but the point being, I did some pictures for members of each group, and so generally got left alone, you know, generally got left alone for that, but most kids, I imagine, didn't have that, you know, for parents, now, I guess, if you have to send your kid, you know, to the makeshift prison that is the school, you know, the school system, set them out with some kind of skill. Set them out with some kind of, you know, those fish under the deep with light, with that, you know, the draw. You know, like, give them something like that to dazzle. Now, teach them magic. Teach them sleight of hand. Give them something. Give them something to work the crowd, to kind of get a better chance at avoiding a lot of these common social problems that kids tend to run into. Because it can't be hell. You know, I would almost say that kids actually can't choose their friends in the same way that adults have more freedom to. But at the same time, because of the proximity, I think kids have an easier time when it comes to that. Even the kids who are bullied, I mean, you read these stories where they band together, you know, bullied kids tend to band together, you know, so they'll find solidarity within their social spheres, even if it's through aggressive means. So, you know, God forbid that happens to your kids.
Well, nowadays we didn't have as many problems, but I know that growing up, Dad was very, you know, just the words of wisdom that he would always give us when it came especially to, like, our school, you know, and the friends that we would choose.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, is that your baby or mine?
Yeah,
your baby.
That's my baby. She's running away from the banana, so.
Okay. But, you know, Dad always said this line, and it's so true, and this one applies through your adult years, but it's company corrupts character. And I remembered him also telling me, you know, it's forget about being popular. You're going to just make yourself a target. Because at the time, too, there was a lot of the, you know, like the Columbine shooting was happening, and it wasn't as rampant as it is nowadays with these school shootings, but if you're going to be, like, amongst the popular crowd, chances are the person that's coming to school with, like, the gun trying to kill everybody, you don't really want them to know who you are, because you're likely associated at that point with somebody that might have said something to piss them off, and then you don't want to just be in the line of fire to begin with.
Sure.
So I remembered being more of like, okay, social butterfly, like the kind of friends that I had. I had a few friends that we were just really close, but we could go around to just about every group and be cool with them. You know, we'd be able to have conversations with just about anybody from any group, and conversation enough that it wasn't too deep, it wasn't too, you know, pointless either, and could go about my day and people just be like, oh, that's Talia, just, you know, leave her alone, right? And I think that
sure.
You kind of had that same, because, yeah, with school, it was just, how am I going to survive this week, really?
Yeah.
How am I going to survive this week, stay out of the drama, and just get to graduation so I can never look back at this, you know? It's just like, had
a
goal to begin with.
The sad thing is, I didn't even know what I had until I reflected on it much later on. I didn't know I was walking around with this weird kind of pseudo shield, social shield, that was keeping me from all these problems that other kids were experiencing. Because, again, what did I know? I wasn't, you know, and coming from a more male perspective on that, you know, generally males have less empathy than the females, because I know the female social groups in school tend to be a little bit more visceral when it comes to social punishment. You know, guys may roughhouse every now and then, but, you know, girls eat other girls from the inside. And I don't mean that in any weird sexual way. I mean, that's like, it's like the kind of attacks that girls put on each other, I feel have far longer reaching damage that they instill.
But kids
don't know this. I didn't know this.
Going to school, shooting everyone up. You're not getting a girl that goes, I mean, you're seeing a lot of suicide rates go up. With kids,
oh, yeah.
And there's a
yeah.
lot of online bullying and that kind of stuff. But the depressed girl individual is not necessarily at home planning
right.
to go to
well,
school and kill everybody.
In that sense, girls are less confrontational. Guys have this weird call to action. There's this, you know, I think the reason why a lot of male and female fights generally happen, you know, sometimes when you know, and I have to remind I might have mentioned this before, but I have to remind myself, even when I'm arguing with my wife, sometimes I could avoid an entire week of just miserable, you know, arguing if I could just ask her, like, is this something I need to just listen to, or is this something I need to fix? Typically, obviously I can't speak for all guys, and just, you know, generalizing, guys want to fix things. Right. They want a lot of them when they hear a problem for us, it's like, at least for me, it's just, I want to fix this problem right now. But sometimes that's not what the girl wants. Sometimes the woman just wants to vent. She just wants to say what the problem is. Nothing needs to come of it. She just needs to hear that the guy hears what she's saying, understands what she's saying, and more or less also wants to tackle the problem at some specific point in time that's not now, you know? So sometimes they just need to hear, you know, guys just need to hear them out, you know? So I have to stop that initial urge in me to like, oh, I got to fix this now. She's like, nope, maybe I just have to listen now. And I'll listen to it. I'll plot it in my head, and then I'll work on it maybe on the, you know, on the back end so that it's just not a problem
right.
anymore.
Like, wait, okay, so she sounds upset, but she doesn't want a solution.
Exactly.
She just wants me to listen to this. Although, as she's talking, I'm already coming up with five ways that this could just be gone. And, yeah, I
right.
get that. But obviously there's compound in all of this, too, and we're just talking about high school right now. You know, the fact that 1 in 4 graduating right now is going to be on some kind of psychotropic drug for the rest of their lives
yeah.
until they wake up and figure out that that's not going to cure anything. That it's a dangerous time overall for, I mean, just that alone. Like, do I want my daughter or son to be friends in high school with a bunch of kids that are on psychotropic drugs? You know, kids
yeah.
who have been on Ritalin since 5. Because then it's like, what kind of parents do they have too? And these are important things. I never understood as a kid why do mom and dad like want so much to like know who these kids' parents are that we're hanging out with. Because I guess that would just tell them a fuller story, you know, of what now I got to deal with. And anyway, I mean, that stuff all encompassing, all important.
Yeah, and two thoughts on that real quick. These are mind altering drugs. But let's not be carried off or fooled by the names that they give these drugs. And psychotropic, I mean, that you think about that word a little bit, it's almost like, let's see, psych, so it has to do with the mind, tropic, so it has to do with the vacation, so mind vacation. And that's essentially what these drugs do. It turns these kids' brains off. So the friend that most people feel like they're making under the effects of these drugs are not the real person that they think they're making friends with, if there's any other easier way to put that. Because once the drugs wear off, these kids become different people. You know, the depression kicks in, the aggression kicks in, whatever kicks in, not only, you know, switches their brains back, but will definitely alter the kind of relationship they can have with their current friends. These kids, you know, they'll bring them home, show them, you know, kind of like spend time with them with their parents. And is this kid just going to have, you know, now I, as a parent, I got to worry, is this kid on his meds? If his meds run out, am I going to have to replace some furniture in my house? Am I going to have to, you know, am I going to have to be ready to defend myself if he's on the attack? You know, what's going to happen? You just don't know, because you don't know what he's being affected by, because the doctors don't know what he's affected by, and they're just giving him these drugs to just turn his mind off and make him more, I can't even say the word reasonable, but at least make him more approachable.
Well, and you're also so easily, I mean, in that age too, you are so much more easily influenced by these people in your school, way over your parents at home, you know, who you're going through a lot of issues with. You know, you're going to go through moments where you hate mom and dad. And so then it's kind of like, well, then who are you running to for your comfort? And that guy, you're running to those kids that don't even know how to deal with like the Wi-Fi being off for an hour. Like they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. Yeah, I guess it's just both loads of problems can definitely be avoided in just that if you did not throw your kid into government schooling. The middle school years and the high school years, I think, are some of the scariest for nowadays. But if you're prepared and you got a plan for that, then obviously you don't have to worry. But then coming out of high school, let's say, okay, if you survived high school, you're not too scorned. Then now it's kind of real world time, right? Real world time.
Right.
You're getting maybe a real job, meaning a real job could be it's anything that you're clocking into and you're getting a paycheck at the end of the week. You know, like for me it was Jamba Juice, and I was a hostess at like a Buca di Beppo. I worked at the Wild Animal Park gift shop. I had a bunch of jobs because, you know, I just loved that I could make money finally, and I didn't have to ask mom and dad for money because they never gave us anything. But now you're entering into a whole new world of friendships, and how do you now, how do you now tell the difference between what makes a good friend? And because now it's no longer having to be alone, like you're clocking in somewhere, so you're still going to get paid regardless. You really need a friend at work? Not really. I guess, how does it go from there? Now you could be more selective because you got to choose the people that on your time off the clock, where you're not getting paid to have to interact with these people and be civil. Now you get more of a say, right? Okay, well, off the clock, my time now is still valuable. So how do I select who it is I'm going to be spending like a Friday night with, or a, you know. enter into that
world. Yeah, I'd say it definitely, I guess for most people, it would probably feel like, especially if you didn't have a lot of high school friends that kind of carried through, you know, how rare is it now when people graduate high school that they're off? They shoot off in different directions, different states maybe. I know I had some friends who were in the athletics, and they ended up, you know, moving out of state to join other athletics programs in different states. It just kind of becomes a crapshoot of life decisions. Some people only, I know our parents really only moved us to that area for the school. And anything beyond that was like, well, you know, we're wherever it takes you kind of thing. you kind of have to try to figure out where we're going to branch out to. And, you know, so there's, it's like a bond. I would say it's like a small bond that drops on your social life after you graduate. And you just have to do your best to pick up the pieces and figure out who you can still recognize and stay in contact with, at least in my case. I can only imagine I can't imagine it's gotten any better these days. Especially with, the rise of single parenthood. The options are probably a little bit more strained for a lot of these kids. So I would say as far as my experience goes, I did do some years in community college. I actually didn't make any friends in community college. It was one of those weird things where I was just, I think because I was paying for it, out of my own pocket from the money I was making, because I worked right after I graduated. Well, not right after, but maybe a year after I graduated, I got a job first. I got a part-time job and all that money went to unimportant things where I didn't save. And then it got to a point where I wanted, you know, I had to, everyone was saying, got to get back into school. Got to get some kind of degree. You know, so I jumped on board that scam train and started paying out of my own pocket. Yeah, and started paying out of my own pocket for school. And I think because of that, I was actually more focused on my studies because I was paying for it. I realized that if I fail, I would have to pay for it again. So it just became a mathematical choice to do better, to do the best that I can. So I studied harder in college, and I made really good grades in college. I still did part-time jobs. And I think what happened was I ended up making friends with coworkers. Again, it was a proximity thing. I didn't have the luxury of time to just, you know, waltz about on the internet and find some like-minded people in my area. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe people do that. Maybe people did friend searches back then. They were just like, and I know they get into groups. Hey, I like collecting stovetops. It's a passion of mine. Let's get together kind of thing. Craigslist your friends kind of deal back then. I ended up with proximity friends. So really, I wasn't even really thinking about it choice-wise. And I guess that's something to think about. I guess I have to really, you know, a lot of these things I kind of have to look down deep and find out, like, why didn't I feel like that was important as other people would feel like it's important? And it really wasn't even till later where I feel like the people that I did gravitate towards, who even in even amongst my coworkers, happened to be like-minded, fun people. I always feel like I could still pick up the phone and call them today and we could just have a conversation, you know, but as far as the friendship goes, it was probably strained just due to the distance at this point. So I would even say most of my friendships are strained, just kind of see them every 3 or 4 years, because what happened was I made a friend who I ended up marrying. So, you know, so it was just, and you know, with married life comes, you know, you kind of cloister yourself a little bit. At least I did. I cloistered myself, and we started, you know, we started our own life, and it was so it because so life. I guess my point is, as far as my experience goes, my life was a bit of a mess socially, you know. And you mentioned earlier, I don't get on social media because, frankly, it's a giant, giant waste of time. And I can't stress it enough. The social media, and I'm talking about social media that people use to try to, like, you know, share, you know, their, you know, you have those people who share their thoughts. They just dump their mean thoughts with no explanations, and then they just move on. I understood from the very beginning. And my friend, well, I had a friend who told me exactly what Facebook was, you know, back in the day. And he was just like, oh, this place you can use to hook up with people. It's like, you know, yeah, essentially that's what it's turned into. He's spot on about the friends that he made. You know, he didn't know most of them. Friends back then was just, or at least back when it started, I can't say it's changed too much, but it's just become some kind of weird social meter that people use. You know, friends are more like followers now. I would kind of use them more like how Instagram uses them in terms of how they track them. It changed the landscape of friendship.
It really did. It really did that because now you're using the word friends, mutual friends, all that stuff. But if you're talking about online friends, I guess it doesn't. It just would be too much space for them to put acquaintances, because that's truly what they are, you know, especially when it comes to social media. But then it brings us into all of these different, I'm going to say it is mostly for women. It is mostly a woman's issue, I think, when it comes to the online friends. And then you got your mom group friends. You got, you know, just like the neighborhood mom friends. So, but me, it always boils back down to I only have my, like, handful of friends. Like, this dad told us all our lives, you only need a handful. Any more than a handful of friends, you're just now throwing your trust around, and you're asking for a lot of drama to come into your life. That's not necessary. I do think that you should see your spouse as a friend. I think that for sure being friends first with the person that you're ultimately going to spend your life with is huge. That's really important. And although many are going to say, like, but there's no way for a guy to be friends with a girl and there not be, like, feelings there, you know? So when I tell people, well, no, Jeff and I, we were friends for 4 years before we even became, before we even started seeing each other in that kind of way, Jeff will even just deny that with as much as saying, well, no, I always was attracted to you. I just didn't make any moves, but there was always attraction there, you know. I guess I'd be lying, too, if I said that I wasn't attracted to him in that way. But, you know, we didn't act on it for reasons of, you know, I guess, I also had a relationship at the time, and so, but we got to know each other as friends, which I think was really beneficial before starting up any kind of relationship with each other. So.
Yeah, no, that's just blame biology or blame whatever, but, you know, we can't help who we are attracted to. But we can, but the only thing we can help is, you know, like you said, how we act on it. You know, there are a lot of female coworkers that I was in proximity of. You know, even if they were single, I, in my situation, I just, you know, either I wasn't really looking for it, or it was just maybe our values didn't connect. You know, now that I think about it, I think a lot of the initial pushback was happening internally, and I wasn't even realizing it. But it was, I tend to base a lot of my acquaintances, the people in my circle, on their values. You know, what they believe in, what they enact on, and how they operate, in their daily lives. It's important. It is important. It's not the end all. I think people who, you know, a smart person getting together with a not so smart person can share a lot of laughs and a lot of memories in life. But maybe that's just not the way I'm geared. And I think, you know, before stepping into that friend world and now choosing, whether it's choosing new friends or old friends who have to go, because that also tends to be the case that most people find themselves in now. You know, most people
considering let's just talk about what's going on in the past. Because I think a lot of us experience this. In the past, 3 years, many of us have lost friends, people we thought were friends, over views. Okay? So I think that's where, the conversation will probably also trickle into tomorrow's talk. But can you be friends with somebody who thinks the complete opposite of you? In terms of politics, things like hot topics, things like vaccines, because can you can I really be friends with somebody that thinks that parents should have no rights when it comes to their children and that mandates should be across the board because they genuinely feel like it is for the greater good? Is it possible to carry on a friendship with somebody like that? Because, look, if news comes up, like today earlier with this typhus thing where I needed somebody to call and talk to, is that person obviously would be somebody that I'd have to guard myself around and my thoughts and my views, right? Same
yeah,
with that.
I think...
I mean, we'll just... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just touching on that, I think whether honesty has to be brutal or just being honest, the person at the end of the line should at least be willing to take those first steps. You know, they might not agree with everything you believe you say, but if they're not even willing to take those first steps with you, and they just instantly shut you down on the things that you feel are valuable to talk about, are important to talk about, and then it's kind of time to reconsider whether or not this person is somebody you should be calling at all, you know, because even whether or not you've made the decision, your brain kind of makes that decision for you at the end. You know, you register that person as, okay, this, you know, trigger warning. Yeah, you put a trigger warning on that person to use that term. And how likely are you to call them again when something real happens in life, when a real, gut-wrenching kind of emotional pull hits you, tugs at your mind and your heart, and you got to share it with somebody. No, it's not going to be that person anymore. So,
I mean, and you know, I have to admit that there were many people that I said, okay, fine, bye, when it came to political views, especially around 2015, 2016, because can I continue on a friendship with somebody who believes that if you at all supported our nation's current president, that makes you a racist and a bigot and all the other terms that they wanted to throw in there? Well, no. I cannot continue on a friendship with somebody who truly thinks I am a racist because I voted for somebody based on policy and also who who was suddenly a racist only when he was running for office. I mean, literally, I'm not going to get into that right now, but no, I don't need to continue on a friendship with somebody who truly believes that.
Give your brain.
And now you're attacking my character. I do not want to associate with you at all, if that's the case. And they might feel the same way. They might, if they truly in their heart believe that anybody that voted for this person is a bigot and a racist, by all means, do not be friends then with somebody that you truly think is like that and is in support of that. Then you have to write people off in that way. And so when people say, oh, but politics shouldn't affect, it shouldn't. I agree with you. It shouldn't, but it does. It ultimately does. How do you continue
political
friendship with people like this?
People need to, nobody needs to do anything. But the realization that politics starts within the family is a telling sign about just how important these discussions can be, whether you're talking about politics or talking about the way you live. People tend to live or tend to vote on issues that that have made them comfortable in life. And this, there's all kinds of psychological studies that show, men tend to vote more conservative because we are used to the act of gathering resources for the family. For the longest time, the men were seen as the breadwinners. So, if you want to blame evolution, so evolution kind of like dictated what men's political viewpoints were, in the same way they did for the females. And females, because they're more the homesteaders, they're the nesters, they are generally I don't say taken care of, but history has shown, history has kind of given women that role of the caretakers of the house and family. So they tend to vote for more socialist type laws and programs, and they care. Like, so socialist programs, while evil in the long run, because they generally take from others to give to others, and that's on principle that is wrong and immoral. They are done with a caring spirit, if you want to say. So women who are used to being more empathetical, who enjoy dealing with people more than things, like guys do, tend to vote for more socialist agendas. So that's kind of the way that just the genders are split, generally. Not everybody. There's always the tall Chinese person playing basketball right now. but they're unfortunately not the exceptions. They're not the norm. They are the exceptions. So when it comes to the talk, that tends to be the case too between male friends and female friends that you'll have, and it's so yeah, it all ties in. Whether or not we want to talk about it, a lot of it does stem from people's upbringings. There are a lot of males out there right now who are more socialist, and a lot of that can most likely be explained by them just having parents who just maybe overcared a little bit, like gave them a little too much ease in life, and didn't there wasn't that sense of struggle. I know a guy. I call him an online friend. But as far as our political views go, it wasn't a stretch of the imagination to figure out that he was a Bernie supporter just based on his history. I mean, he was raised by a single mom. He is, you know, nearing his 30s. He still lives at home. So this is a man who's been cared for most of his life, living in a socialized structure where other people or another authority figure is taking care of him and all his needs. So, you know, Bernie Sanders, right up his alley. You know, it just made sense because he was already living that lifestyle. So why wouldn't he vote for more of that lifestyle? I mean, he didn't exactly sound like he was ready to leave the home. He's just fine. He's just fine living in the house and having his meals and his schedule taken care of him. And he's nearly 30 years old. So it starts at the house. It really does. And when you get a sense of how people live, how your friends live, it's not a stretch of the imagination to figure out where their political allegiances lie. So you don't even have to talk about politics. You just say, hey, tell me about your day. How does your day look? how what's your relationship with your family like? You'll figure it out. You know, so without even having to get into the, do you believe in Trump? Do you believe in the wall? Just asking about their family, asking about their how their relationships are locally, and you can make an easier assessment through that without having to come to verbal blows. That'd be the long answer to how to find out what these people believe in and whether or not you can ally. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's very true what you're saying with that. I had a neighbor recently that we, you know, because Amelia and I, we have this rule that she has to have a few different play dates, you know, typically they're in like public settings, parks, before I get to know the parent and, you know, I don't want to say waste my time, but you know where I'm going.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to invest.
That's a nice way to put it.
Right. Well, I don't want to invest really and waste their time either. I don't want to do that. But, you know, you can learn a lot from these people by just a simple conversation on their childhood and their life. And, for instance, one mom who lived here in this development, she was talking about, there was one conversation where it was like our second conversation we ever had, but everything wrong in her life was someone else's fault and doing. It was one of those conversations of, and she even looks at me and she goes, you know, I mean, I'm not like a lot of women here who lucked out and have these awesome husbands who just like take care of them. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. So then immediately I go, you know, that's not really a luck thing. And she's like, sure it is. I'm like, well, you don't just luck out and have a good marriage. It's, you have to work on it. You don't just luck out and marry somebody who's not a complete a-hole. And this is a woman who, you know, has had three different kids with three different men. And not that, you know, we can get into that kind of conversation another time, but I wasn't even judging her for her life, but I can look at her life, hear her life story, and come to the conclusion that, lady, you've made a lot of really terrible choices. But the way she views things is it was just bad luck in life. Like she was just a magnet for these terrible people. But there are choices there. There are choices that she still made in continuing on intimate relationships with these people that ultimately lead into pregnancy. And when you hear about how these men were during, before they even had a baby together, the way that they treated her, it was like, well, then why did you have a kid with, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
But this is already a woman who views somebody like me, like she'll look at somebody like me and just see my marriage for just the surface, which is, well, like, look, he's such a nice guy. He's good to her. He's good. And look at that and call it luck.
Yeah.
That I just lucked out. That it wasn't really hard work and still isn't really hard work. Can I realistically continue on a friendship with this person? No. And this is somebody that's going to be taking those thoughts and ideas and you know, passing that on to her children, who that doesn't necessarily mean that her kids are going to grow up and think the exact same way as the mom, right? But this is what's going to be repeated into their minds as they grow up. Is this somebody that I want associating with my kids too? Not if I can help it.
Yeah.
You know, is it, does this sound mean? No. It sounds like I'm guarding a lot of different aspects in my life and in the life of my kids. And while I can have a say, while I can train up my kids to already start seeing these type of people and the, that thought process for what it is, you know, I mean, is that a good thing? Can we be doing that and instilling that in our kids in their young years? I do not want children that blame every bad decision they've made on everything
luck.
Else, on the government,
yeah.
on the president, on, you know, it's like you made that choice, though. There's just no accountability anymore. And I need friends in my life who can kind of take a situation like that and see it for what it is. I need people in my life who are accountable, responsible. Like, these are people that I just feel like I want to associate with. I want to associate with like, people who have similar values, who have common goals in life, who can also bring balance into my life, who can motivate me and encourage me to do better. It's just same interests. And is that okay? Is that okay to want that and to have, I guess, ultimately, these kind of demands for the people that you're going to allow into your time that is already so limited?
Yeah, well, I guess then the important question to ask before you can even answer any of those wants is, how much do I respect myself? Now, that's apart from how much do I like myself, I think how much do I respect myself kind of takes it to that next level where you are just, you know, you want your life to be kind of like a gravity well for good, right? Because with good things tend to happen. You know, if you bring good things in your life, and good things tend to happen, you make good decisions in your life, you're more likely that good things will happen. Not, you know, sometimes you make good decisions and a bad thing happens. That happens. But if you're making bad decisions, bad things will always happen after that. You know, there's nothing follows bad but bad, right? So having that responsibility, I mean, you know, taking that accountability and saying, no, I got to take responsibility for my life. I got to start putting more good and start flushing out more bad. I guess there's that tie-in that we were talking about earlier. You know, you want your life to look like a nice suburb. You want the grass to be pretty trimmed up. You want the neighborhood to be pretty clean. If a tent city starts encroaching across the street, you know, it's time to fight against it. You know, it's time to change the scenery or fight against it. Whatever you need to do to keep your neighborhood, to keep the people in your life as meaningful as possible. You know, and especially in this day and age, maybe pre-Trump, not as bad. I mean, I know it was still I should say pre-Obama was not as bad, because pre-Obama studies were showing that, you know, the racial divide has all but diminished. You know, and when Obama took office, after he left, I'm not going to blame Obama. I know everybody blames Obama, but for whatever reason, the country had never been more divided by the time Trump took office. So pre-Obama, not too much to worry about in terms of political leanings, because the far left had not really been a thing. They were a thing, but they were in the fringe end, and people recognized that the far left was crazy, the same way they recognized the far right was crazy. But now the far left is the mainstream left. And now we have to worry about political leanings, because the extremists have worked their way into the main line of beliefs for political agendas. And you have no choice now we have no choice now but to buckle down, especially for the conservatives, and keep as much of the left influence away from yourself and yeah, your kids. You know, when you have kids, that changes the rules again. You know, it's one thing to be a kid, you've got different rules, and then you're an adult, and now you have different rules for friendships, and then now you have kids. Now the rules pretty much all come crashing in like a tsunami, and you are now in charge of the well-being of a mind that has not yet fully developed, a mind that's going to absorb every good and every stupid thing that comes its way. And you have to push back against it. So, you know, the more you surround yourself with bad, the more likely it is you're going to have the bad outcomes for not just yourself, but for your family, for your future family, for your future legacy. You know, so it's,
that's true. It definitely changes things up. So you can't, I mean, that's where I get most of my questions, to be honest, here is, it's for moms who struggle because they want their kids to be able to have friends, but the moms in their mommy groups are all, you know, pro-vaccines, really think that if the kids are unvaccinated, that they're spreading disease, which is really ironic in that these unvaccinated kids, the most they have is like a cold that they go through during the year, you know? But really, why are you going to do that to yourself? Are you going to put yourself in a group of women who truly, you know, behind your back, view your kid as some like disease carrying, you know, and then the list goes on in what they truly think. Why do you want your kid around that? Like moms like that? Why do you want to be around that? For fear of like that your kid doesn't have friends? Then you got to really sit back and consider what the heck a friend is, which is why we're having these conversations. Is that even a friend? Somebody who will likely be the first to report on you when things go down? You know, you can't even confide in that person because the most they have to know is that you don't vaccinate your kid, and you think that when you're not around, they're not talking about you. Now you're a quack and crazy. And it was like, really? That's who you want to associate yourself with? That's the additional stress you want to bring into your life? There is nothing wrong with having your kid go to a school with a bunch of kids who have a bunch of these moms that think the opposite of you and literally, okay, clocking out, we're done with school for the day, move on. We don't need to associate with these people past these hours. We don't.
Yeah.
And you're lying to yourself if you do. You're lying to yourself, and you know the additional stress you're causing on yourself, that's your fault. That is your problem, your fault, and it's really hard to have empathy towards your situation. Because it is not hard to find moms who have similar views. It's just not.
Not anymore.
But my kids go to school with their kids. And fine. School, where we're talking about school right now, that is very temporary.
Yeah.
That's a temporary thing. You want to put up with that on weekends too? You know, I've had my fair share of fake friends who the minute my back has been turned, they have talked about me and then now my baby because of opposing views.
Yeah, they'll end up using it against you for sure.
And then they will be the first to act like confused when you've written them off. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't talk to Natalia anymore. I don't know what happened there. Not sure what happened. I'll tell you what happened. And I'll be the first to screenshot what happened and send it. Oh, this is what happened. What happened is I found out that through the grapevine You were running your mouth about me and my family. That's what happened. That's why we're no longer friends. I mean, I've only had to do that a few times. Just like dumbfounded.
And you know, if you were a friend, you know, when your friend has a problem or you have a problem, like, you bring it up to your friend. You don't bring it up to other. If you're bringing it up to other people, then and you can't talk to your friend, then what the heck is the title for? You know, so. Yeah.
Then they're not. They're not friends. What they are is this fake situation that you've put into your lap to convince yourself that, well, at least my kid will be invited to a party over the weekend. You know, at least my kid gets that invite. Because that's like a fear for many parents. And it's like, you need to sit back. If these are some of your biggest worries in life right now, you moms out there that are worried that your kid's not going to get the invite to the school party on the weekend, you have some serious issues that you need to start dealing with, because that stems a little farther back. And I think you're carrying on moments of being alone in childhood, not knowing how to deal with that. And you're making the situation bigger than it needs to be for your kid. And it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the need for, and I think, but that's the big sell, right? That's what the media, that's what all these TV shows sell. You know, you want to have the cool kid, you want to have the calm, level-headed kid, but you're throwing them into a situation where, and this is why, for me, homeschooling is, you know, is the option to go, obviously, because what school systems tend to do early on is artificially put your kid in a hierarchy. You don't know where they are in that hierarchy. The school will figure it out, or the kid mixed with the school will come out of it with a placement, okay? And unless your kid is like Trump-level ego, they're going to find themselves somewhere. Most kids find themselves in the middle, but you just have to keep your fingers crossed to hope that your kid doesn't find themselves somewhere on the bottom, because, and especially after 12 years of government schooling, that position in that hierarchy that your kid finds themselves in and you find your kid in will stick for a while. Will tend to stick, unless, you know, pending a lot of self-reflection and possible therapy, they're going to treat the rest of their life like they're in that level of where they exited this big social, you know, experiment called school. And it's artificial. It's not natural. It's not a natural placement. I would rather instill values that and principles that I believe in, that my wife believes in, keep her within at close range to those values throughout her developing years, so that when she's an adult, she will surround herself with valuable people. And she will not just have to, like, crawl out of the dregs of disastrous relationships, friendships that went south, and all the other problems that are more or less avoidable in life because of some fear of, my kid needs to socialize. Like, yeah, sure, your kid can socialize with you. You socialize with them because you're the one, you're the beacon of the child. You have been, like, what changed? For the first, three, 4 years of their life, you've been that cornerstone, that person that they can turn to, and then you just all of a sudden give it up? You give it up because, well, either, you know, you work life dictated it, or the government dictated it, somebody dictate that you have to forcibly give this great blooming relationship up, because a group of women who you barely see, you know, you barely see throughout the week, are pressuring you into fitting for some kind of social badge. You know, that you're all of a sudden is more important than anything else in your life. It logically,
really, if you notice,
the train just goes off
kids,
the rails.
Yeah, and you know what? You have a daughter. I've got a daughter, and I think you're right. It is especially more, you know, it's more of a concern when it comes to girls. It just is. And there will be those little anomalies here and there, you know. But going back to that, if you're noticing, like for me, Amelia, we've discussed this, okay? She is in the thick of it. She's 8 years old right now, and she is in that moment in her life where she and I are having a lot of conversations, something that mom just never did with us. So then I had to learn from the worst people, which were the kids in school. But
yeah,
she is learning right now how to tell a good friend from a bad friend. But see, they're so young that it doesn't have to be that this is going to be just a bad friend, a bad person for the rest of her life. But right now, I could say, hey, right now, you see the way that so-and-so just is treating you. And she's cried a lot because she's 8. And little 8-year-old girls have different problems in life. But she had this friend of hers for 2 years now. They've been really good friends. And she considers this girl one of her best friends, who in the past year has had, for whatever is going on in this girl's life, she's got this thing, though, where unless she okays it, Amelia's not allowed to do it. Down to the snacks at the snack bar Amelia eats, to the kind of sports they play during recess, the people that Amelia talks to, this girl has apparently for over a year had say. And if she doesn't agree with it, she throws a fit. Literally, her body will hit the floor and she'll cross her arms and ignore and be mad at my daughter. And I didn't know all this was going on until a recent outing where I saw this behavior take place. And, you know, I don't keep quiet, though. So Amelia, when she noticed her friend did this, threw her body down, pouted, ran off. I looked at Amelia first to see what her reaction was going to be. And it was immediately to cry and run after her friend and apologize. That is when my motherly, I go after Amelia, grab her by the arm ever so. It wasn't that gentle of a grab, but it was this grab of, you're not going there and apologizing. Not for this. And I pull her aside and I say, hey, I got a couple questions here for you. Look at me in the face right now. Is this normal behavior from this kid? And she said, she just nodded. So Amelia's crying, she nodded. I said, okay, because I only witnessed it twice just now, her telling you what to do. How long has she been doing this? And that's when it all started coming out. Okay, Amelia, we need to have a talk. Right now, you are not going to chase after somebody and apologize because you didn't do anything. Do you really think you did something wrong right now? And she's crying and saying no. I said, okay, we're done here. We're going home. No, I don't want to go home. It became one of those, no, we're going home. Because you and I need to have a long conversation. You're not in trouble, but we need to have a talk. You're not going to let people treat you this way. I don't care if you have to sit alone at the cafeteria tomorrow. We need to have a talk because this can't continue because I just saw. You got to see the end from the beginning here. That is a recipe for a disaster of a friendship. And she is only 8 years old right now. If she was 16, harder conversation to have, right?
Right.
But right now, she's 8. And so I'm going to come in as the parent, and I'm going to share stories of my childhood and kind of very similar instances like this, that I had to go through just so she doesn't feel alone. But we're going to squash this. This is not going to continue, because that little bit of behavior there, you see in a lot of adult friendships too, where it's not as extreme to throwing your body on the ground pouting, but there is that. It carries on, and it's toxic.
Yeah.
It's toxic. Yeah. Hey, like, who around you is toxic? So when it comes to just for today, because, we got like 15 more minutes on this conversation, but if you've got people around you that you can't tell the difference, you don't know if they're going to be toxic in your life, you don't know if they're worth maintaining a friendship with, there's a few questions you can ask yourself right now. Does this person genuinely care about me, my kids, my family? There's one. And really sit with that. Meaning, if something were to truly happen to you right now where you needed the help, or there was just something going on and you need that shoulder to cry on, is this somebody that genuinely cares? You know, is this somebody who your secrets are safe with? Can you even tell a secret to this person and know with 100% confidence they're not going to tell it to the next person that comes by because it's that juicy and that good, they can't keep it to themselves? How about, will this person stand up for me when I'm not around? Does this person, because I know with full confidence the friends that I have, number one, if they hear something bad being said about me, their first thought is, no, this is not true, or I'm going to call her and talk to her about this right now. This is like, you know what I mean? This is somebody I'm going to go and go directly to the source. I'm not going to engage in more drama and talk when something like this could literally be squashed over a phone call. These are questions that I have to ask about the people that I keep in my life. I mean, am I missing some important questions here?
Was that rhetorical? Or no, I think I think those are, of course, those are foundational questions. You know in your gut. You know, people think, you know, making friends if you already have a group of friends. And this is just really for the people who already have that group of, you know, they feel like they have 100 friends. When life happens, I don't want to use the jail example because everybody uses the jail example, but let's say you're short on your mortgage or your rent. Who are the top two people that you could call to help give you some support during the hard times, like real support that matters. Food in your stomach kind of matters, you know. Those two people, those three people on the top of your list, those are your friends. Those are your friends. You know, you have people, you know, most people don't do therapy, right? And most people don't exactly, you know, especially in this day and age when people grow up, they tend to move far away from their families. They go to opposite. So, you know, it happens. Life happens, and families, it's harder. It's more rare now that families stay together in the same state and the same community that they can call upon. And it's sad. Well, that is sad. The state of most people's reality is your friends are not only your real friends, your close, the top two, the top three that you call. They're not only really your family, but these are the people who you work through most of your major problems out with. You know, if you're struggling internally or you're struggling externally, these are the people that are going to help, or at least should help uplift you, you know, help you dig yourself out of that hole. That's the kind of mindset that you got to have going into these kinds of relationships. That, I mean, they are important, you know, especially if you're not close with your family. It's important to have these lifelines, and they become really vital. But if you surround yourself by shallow people, by people who only really think about you as a number on their friends meter, you will never feel more alone, even amongst your thousands of Facebook friends. If you wake up to that realization that you don't have anyone you can call when life really hits you, you know, and because life is going to hit everybody. It hit us just last year. You know, we're not strangers to it anymore. And these are the most important people in your life that you should be able to rely on. And if they can't provide that, if they don't provide that, and also in exchange, you have to remember there's two sides to that. If you feel like if this person calls you and you're not willing to give up your time and resources to help and aid them, that's also another sign that they're not really a friend to you. You know, so this isn't just all about you. Let's make this about that person. You got to be willing to go to the ends for that person. I have a friend in Florida. If anything ever happened to him and his wife and his family, I'm on a plane. You know, I got a plane ticket, and I'm going to Florida, or I'm bringing him here. You know, that's the kind of mindset I have for this person. If he gets into the sticks, I'm there. I'm there the next day. You know, and the same thing happened with during the friendship with my wife too. During that stage when we were still just friends, you know, I was you can be there for her. So I guess that would be my final thoughts for today in terms of what you need to recognize in your relationship with a person that you deem a friend. How far are you willing to go? You know, for those top three or those top five, if you have five, great, you know, whatever. But how far are you willing to go? How much of your resources and time are you willing to stretch and be there for them at the same time that they're going to do that for you? You know?
Exactly. You know, life's really too short, like you were saying the other day, to be playing pretend with people in your life and getting more or less value by what you're having to put on a face. I don't know. How can you be friends with somebody if you got to avoid what interests you?
Like, yeah.
They're not, like, are they even your friend if you have to remind yourself before being in, like, a setup situation, these are the things we can't talk about.
Yes.
What is that? Just what is that? And so
yeah.
It's okay. It's okay every now and then to sit back and you get friends for different seasons of your life, you know? You got the different. I mean, that movie Stand By Me, right? There's you never have the kind of friends you had when you were 12 years old. There definitely are those kind of friends, you know. But but yeah, in every season of your life, it's okay to reevaluate. You know, who's still around, who really has gone the distance, who can continue that distance with you. Right?
Who do you like being around? You know, like we were talking about earlier, two meteorologists can probably be friends till the end of time because they could, you know, literally talk about the weather all day long. But if you have the kind of friend that you just all you can live on is the small talk, the innocuous stuff, the stuff that's not really going to matter today or tomorrow or next year, you know, just the question you have to ask yourself is how long can you stay awake during this friendship? And again, that's just another situation, yeah, where your brain is going to make, if you don't make the decision to just say like, hey, look, I have fun with you, but we can't keep doing this small talk thing. Like the small, you know, every now and then your brain is going to seek out that bit of intellectual conflict, you know, that little bit of like, hey, let's dig into something today and let's let's just find out where that those limits are, you know, because that's what relationships really, that's where they're really tried and true. That's where the, you know, the rubber meets the road. Is with the limitation, like how far are you willing to go in terms of not only what we do for each other, but how we can talk to each other and what we can kind of get out, you know, and figuring things out together, strategizing together. And these are the makings of really strong relationships. So, like I said, if you don't figure that out, if you don't speak up about it, then your brain's going to do it for you. Your brain's going to tune them out, and your brain is going to automatically log them into the back end and say, well, it was nice knowing you, and you know,
really,
we will be
right.
doing less
Whether
of this.
You do it or not.
We will be. Yeah, we will be doing less of this in the future. That's what your brain is going to just log them in automatically, the little archivist inside your mind. He's going to do the work. So don't worry about it. You're not going to really have to put that extra stretch in, but just realize that's going to be that will be a reality for that specific relationship. You know, because in order to have, you know, it's like find common interests. Part of that means being interested. And when you're not engaged in topics that keep you interested, it's gonna fade out on its own. You know? Right, baby?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's very, very yes. true. I think for those who are moms, you know, it's we know that this type of mentality that's really hard for whoever's struggling with this right now, it likely is something that you've been struggling with for a lot of your life. You got to think back to your childhood friends, how you made friends, what you thought a friend was, what you know a friend is by now, and know that kind of stuff trickles on to your kids. So if you can't be that, like, beacon of a shining example for them, it might really be something that you want to work on, because they're going to ultimately be going through it any day here, your own kids and how they're choosing their friends. And that is just so important to be paying attention to, you know. So we got about 90 seconds left on the chat today. Do you want to kind of close it with anything? And then we can obviously jump on and continue this tomorrow.
Oh man, I don't think 90 seconds would be enough, but I guess just really quick, you know, big ideas will bring a bigger audience. You'll make, you know, when you're afraid, you're in a small group and you're afraid to share your ideas because the small group might have counter ideas and whatever. It's like, okay, fine. We'll, you know, shout it out to other areas, shout out on the internet, and attract people who are, you'll attract more people who are more like-minded than worrying about your small little mom group or dad
right.
group, you know, who knows. Yeah. So I guess that'd be it.
Very true.
Big ideas attract bigger attention. So don't keep them in small groups.
I love that. That's a perfect ending for that. Well, thanks, Jed, for being on today. And I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation tomorrow, because then we can get into that opposites attract, point that you had
yeah,
made, which
sure.
is awesome. but yeah, we'll chat soon. Have a good day.
You too.
Talk tomorrow. Okay. Bye. All right, guys.
Bye-bye.
So Chris Levels will be on in about 10 seconds here. Thanks for listening in. We'll continue this up tomorrow. Looking forward to your messages on here too. Bye, guys.